Welcome to the final Phys Ed cast for 2019. I'm your host, Nathan Horn from iphysed.com, and this is the Phys Ed cast, a collection of stories from around the world of physical education, coaching, and sport. And what a year it has been in 2019. So many things have happened, so much to talk about. And this episode really is a look back at the year that was in 2019. I'll be sharing some of the highlights from the different guests that we've had, as well as some personal highlights and some goals for the year ahead. So let's dive on in and take a look back at the Phys Ed cast in 2019. This is the Phys Ed cast. ...2019 was the second year for the Phys Ed cast podcast, and in this year we had a heap of different guests. We were able to put out, I think, 7 episodes over the course of 2019, and we're able to learn more about the stories of physical educators all around the world. People like Ben Landers, Tim Fletcher, Kelly Busatil, Skylar Bowles, Carl Conliffe, and Jace Ferguson. Now, later in this episode, I'll be sharing some of the highlights from those particular episodes of the podcast. And if you hear something in those highlights that really draws you to that episode, I really highly recommend going back and listening to the episode in full. I've really tried to pull out some of the key messages or key points from those different episodes so that it highlights some of the great things that you can get from listening to this podcast. We started off the year by interviewing a good friend of mine, somebody that I met in North Carolina at the PE Institute, and he does amazing work through his website, thepespecialist.com. His name's Ben Landers, and I was able to chat to him about something called the Conflict Corner.
Talking about that idea of conflict, because, you know, being elementary teachers, we often get kids that get themselves into conflicts on a regular basis, and trying to teach them ways to be able to deal with that conflict. You have a really great way of doing that. Do you want to talk a little bit about the Conflict Corner?
Yeah, for sure, man. Conflict Corner is a easy way to teach your kids how to resolve their own issues. So the way I present that at the beginning of the year is like, look, guys, I love to help you figure out your problems, but I'm not always going to be here. You're going to be gone in sixth grade. I'm not with you at recess. I'm not with you over summer break. Like, one big thing in life is learning how to figure out issues and problems when you have issues and problems. So when you have an issue and problem in PE class, I'm going to teach you how to solve it. And I have all the steps on this poster. We have a little poster called the Conflict Corner. And I take them through like the steps of resolving the conflict. And then I tell them if they can ever get to the bottom of the steps and they can't figure it out, I'm always here to help them. But honestly, they never need my help because, let's be honest, it's never that hard to solve an issue. And I originally got that idea from a PE teacher called J.D. Hughes. He's a teacher in Georgia. And he had a little system he called the Work It Out Corner, where he had like little table and chairs and kids could go over and like talk about something that happened in PE class. And I was listening to a TED Talk about body language around the same time when I heard him talk or read in one of his books that system. And the TED Talk was all about body language and how when you open your hands up and like hold your hands in front of you, palms up, it like scientifically reduces all these stress levels and like the anxiety hormones decrease and stuff. And I was like, oh man, that's like a perfect way to start this whole like conflict resolution process. And so that's the first step in the Conflict Corner, is the kids have to walk over to the poster and they like hold their hands out, palms up. And so it's really funny when you have kids that are actually doing it in class, like, oh, let's see two kids walk over there and they like have their hands out, palms up. But it really does help diffuse the issues and the arguments. And it's been a really great system. So you can definitely just give that one a Google. If you Google Conflict Corner, you should be able to find it pretty quickly.
do you find that, I know when I've used Conflict Corner or similar things, what ends up happening naturally is the kids realize that, sort of like goes back to the cookie thing that you were saying before, they realize that, well, hang on a second, while I'm here arguing about something that happened in this game that probably is pretty inconsequential to the grand scheme of things, I'm missing out on actually playing. And so I found it as the year goes on, what ends up happening is kids will get themselves into those conflicts, realize that actually it's not such a big deal and I don't want to go to the conflict corner because it's going to mean that I'm going to miss out on playing. And then all of a sudden they get over it and they move on. Do you find that happens at all with your students?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like a filter. Like basically what kids just want you to solve their problems for them. And when you say, no, actually, I'm going to make you take the time and responsibility to solve your own problem, they're like, oh, it's not that important. I'm just going to keep playing. So it's like a filter to let them realize that they should just shrug off most of the things that they get frustrated about.
Some great insight there from Ben around ways to help students manage their emotions in a very highly emotionally charged environment that is often our gymnasium. So big thanks to Ben for catching up with us earlier this year. And I'm hoping to see Ben again at the PE Institute coming up this July, July 2020 in Asheville, North Carolina. It will be the final version of the PE Institute, celebrating a lot of the hard work that Adi Kamiya has done over the years. And I am deeply honored to have been invited to be once again a keynote speaker at this conference. So looking forward to getting down to Asheville and catching up with the whole entire phys ed community and sharing some of my thoughts around purposeful physical education as a keynote speaker as well as a workshop presenter. So if you are able to make your way to North Carolina this summer, I would highly, highly, highly recommend this conference as one of the best physical education conferences available out there anywhere in the world. Speaking of meaningful physical education or purposeful physical education, another one of our guests on the Phys Ed cast this year was Dr. Tim Fletcher. Now, Tim is an Australian living in Canada, and he has been at the forefront of some really exciting research in the area of meaningful physical education. It's something that has really interested me and a lot of other people in the physical education community across this year or in 2019. And I was able to catch up with Tim and speak a little bit about some of the research that he and some of his colleagues have been doing around the concept of meaningful physical education.
Reasons that I wanted to talk to you today on the Phys Ed cast was around some of the research and the work that you're doing now, something that you and the people that you're working with have sort of called meaningful physical education. In a nutshell, what are we talking about when we're talking about meaningful PE and the work that you guys are doing?
Yeah, we're trying to focus on things that really get young people interested in movement, really wanting to come back to it time and time again. Like for many of us who are in physical education, teaching or related professions, like physical activity in whatever form it takes becomes such an important part of who we are. It's like it's our identity. Or a large part of our identities. And I think many of us could probably look back and think, well, that, you know, that was such an important part of our lives. But we know for a lot of kids that they just haven't had those experiences for a whole host of reasons. And some of that could be attributed to certain types of physical education that they've experienced, and also youth sport as some of the factors, not all of them, certainly. But we really think that if we focused on providing young people with experiences that are meaningful to them, that have some sort of personal significance, that get them caring about movement, and that caring could be they care about it because it's such an enjoyable part of it, or they care about it because it provides them with some sort of satisfaction in overcoming a challenge or whatever it may be. There's quite a lot of evidence to suggest that those types of experiences tend to get people going back more and for longer beyond the school years. And so that's where we think the focus should be. We don't think it's the solution, but for my colleagues, mainly Deirdre Croynin, who's at Mary Immaculate College in Ireland, who I've been working with on this for the last 5 or 6 years, that's where we feel the emphasis should be. So we've sort of set out to try and shape an approach or outline an approach that teachers and teacher educators can use to provide meaningful experiences on an ongoing basis.
So I think that raises an interesting point, and I sort of why I wanted to ask you about this is, if we've had this experience, we're now physical education teachers, we're in front of kids, I think there's the danger that, and you see it happen a lot, where people teach the way that they were taught, or they teach the things that they were taught and the things that they feel comfortable with. So if we're trying to engage in a more meaningful approach to physical education, where we're trying to make it meaningful for all of those students, particularly those ones that don't feel a joy or a connection to movement, how do we make sure that we don't continue down this homogenous path of just sort of repeating the same cycle again and again and again?
I think it really takes a commitment to try to get to know all of the kids that you're working with, to not lump them all into the same box, to say, well, you know, all of my students like phys ed because, but you know, if you've got 30 of them who have given you their story in whatever form, and you can start to understand what drives them, what turns them off, and those sorts of things, I think that's probably, to me, it's a very simplistic answer, but I think that's one of the best starting points, is really trying to make an effort to get to know your students, and then to be able to tailor our programs to the best of our abilities to individual student needs. Certainly that's a very difficult challenge, but you know, there's quite a lot of people in the physical education community who are able to do that quite successfully. You know, seeing blogs and Twitter feeds and things like that of people who really seem to be enacting what many of us would consider exemplary practice, it's not impossible. So forming those relationships with kids and then identifying what they find fun, what they like, what they don't like, what they're challenged by, do they prefer individual versus team activities, so that then you can start to make some personal connections to the things that we're doing, to make them relevant to the kids that we're working with.
The work Tim and his colleagues are doing around meaningful physical education is really important work, and it's work that is hopefully going to improve the experience of physical education for future generations. We know as physical educators that not everybody has positive experiences with physical education, and I was able to catch up with somebody who had a negative experience of physical education as a student, but amazingly now has become a physical education teacher herself. Her name's Kelly. She reached out to me on Instagram when I put out a call for people that had negative experiences in physical education. I was looking to create an episode around that idea of negative experiences in physical education, and ways that we as physical educators could hopefully prevent that from happening in the future. And I was just blown away when I heard Kelly's story, and she explained to me that she herself had had such a negative experience as a young person, but now had, maybe not by choice, but had fallen into a physical education position within her school, and has just completely embraced it and uses an opportunity to ensure that the experience she had as a young person is now not going to happen to the young people in her care. Kelly's story is amazing. I highly recommend you listen to the entire episode, but I've included a short snippet of the episode following now.
Could I get them sometimes to demonstrate stuff? So, I told them on the first day that when I told my friends and family that I was going to take PE, that they all laughed at me. And they're like, why? And I said, oh, because I'm not very good at sport. And then I thought about why I didn't like sport much. And that's when I came back to thinking of my own PE education. And
well, it seems like it's a perfect time. It's a perfect time, I guess, right now with
with PE, sort of like really embracing that idea of like lifelong activity and sort of moving away from more organized sport. Cause I feel like for so long it was just like, well, you know, just do sport. Whereas now it's more about how can we like get kids to just like find enjoyment in movement so that they want to be active into
That's
their
right.
life. So it's like a really perfect situation. And like, what an amazing experience for your students to see somebody who, you know, self-identifies as saying like, this is not something I'm very good at, but I'm willing to like try and sort of like learn alongside you. Like, I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I've been trying to do, because I'm sure there'll be kids in there who were just like me at school and would try to avoid it. And when I went to school, for whatever reason, the teachers let me avoid it. So, you know, I'd get to PE and I'd either say, I feel sick, I've got a headache, I need to go to sick bay, and they'd let me sit out, or they'd let me go to sick bay, or they'd let me score. And they never really pushed me to join in. And I think I don't remember being taught actual skills, say for a game of netball. I don't remember being taught the skills of netball or the rules. It was just, okay, we're doing netball now. And I'd just be standing just
expected to know how to do it.
Yeah, and I hated that. And so if I made a mistake, then that was the end of that. I didn't want to do it anymore because I'd stuffed it up. How embarrassing. You know, people are going to laugh at me. So I would just avoid it if I could, and I was pretty good at avoiding it.
Yeah.
So now when the kids try and do it, I say, I know that trick. What, you know, what can we do to make you feel more comfortable about it? So I said on the first day how I said all of this, and I said how I want to be the PE teacher for the kids who don't like sport, who teaches them to enjoy PE. And, of course, I want the kids who love PE and sport to love it even more. But, you know, I think I've got the insight to those kids who don't like it. So I want to try and make it better for them.
Yeah, and I'm that's amazing.
Cool. And I'm really trying to change that shift, because for ages they're going, I'm trying to teach skills, like, you know, fundamental motor skills and things like that, even in the grades 2, 3, 4. And they're going, we're not supposed to do this. We're supposed to be playing football or play a game of basketball. And so I'm trying to get them to see the shift that it's not a sports lesson. It's physical education and health. And so I teach them the skills to help them play those games. So I'm not going to teach them a game of football. I might if I, you know, want to as an extra. But my job's not to teach you how to play football. My job's to teach you some skills. So then you can go and learn to play football.
Kelly's story is one of bravery and inspiration, and I think something that comes out in the episode is the idea that maybe her teachers as a young person weren't deliberately trying to harm her or trying to make her have this negative experience, but it may have come down to the fact that those teachers just didn't have the training or the knowledge or the resources at their disposal to ensure that she was being noticed and that she was being included in the way that we now know she should have been. That's something at iphysed.com that I've been trying to really focus on over 2019, is ways that I can help support teachers in their professional learning journey to ensure that they're delivering purposeful physical education to their students. We try to do that through a number of ways at the website, whether that's in-person workshops, some of our online courses, or our purposeful games database. But everything that is included on the site is really done through the lens of trying to help teachers improve their practice and then directly improve the experience of physical education for their students. I've been lucky enough this year in 2019 to be able to present at a few different events. I was able to present at the Coaches Association of Ontario conference earlier in the year in Markham, Ontario. I was also able to present to the British Columbia physical education conference here in Vancouver earlier in the year, as well as at the University of British Columbia, where I was able to present to some of the pre-service teachers and share a little bit about the way that my school had gone about redeveloping our curriculum to really place physical literacy at its core. I'm going to be blogging about that in early 2020 on the website. So if you're interested in learning about how we used physical literacy as just the core of everything that we did and aligned that to our school's mission and vision, then stay tuned to ifiz.com in early 2020, where I'll be sharing that process in really quite a lot of detail in a few blog posts. So not only was I able to present in person, but I was able to do some work with some school districts, a school district in North Carolina, New Hanover, and a school district in Pennsylvania, Laurel Highlands. And now those school districts, I was able to work on a consulting basis, getting their teachers involved in some online professional learning through webinars, as well as getting the entire school district signed up as part of our online courses. So if this is something that you're interested in your school district, then just reach out to us either via email or via social media. And let me know. I'd be more than happy to work with you and your school or your school district and find ways that I can help support you in your professional learning journey. Now, one other person that I chatted with this year that has been working hard on their curriculum as well is a guy called Jace Ferguson. Now, when I recorded this episode, Jace was working in Dubai at a school called Universal American School. He's since moved on to the International School in Macau. But a lot of the work he's done around curriculum development is really inspiring, and he's really taken what he calls the 30,000 foot view of curriculum. So listen a little bit now to Jace talk about his 30,000 foot view. And if you're interested, then go back and listen to the episode with Jace Ferguson. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about and have you share with people that listen to this podcast was around the way that you are trying to plan your physical education program at the school, because I know if people follow you on Twitter or if they've been to your website, they'll see that curriculum, I think, is an area that you are taking really seriously, and that you're trying to really design and develop in a way that is going to help all of those students that that are in your school. So I don't know if you can sort of just speak to sort of the bigger picture of what you're trying to do there with the curriculum work that you're currently doing.
Yeah, no problem. So like our 30,000 foot view, and I always call that big picture view, our 30,000 foot view is, we want to provide a purposeful physical education program that not only develops that physical literacy aspect of students, but what about the sports literacy and also the wellness literacy? So when they're finished the program, they can walk out not only being able just to be healthy, active individuals, but what about those individuals that have that pathway to go into elite sports or have that pathway available for them to be just athletic leaders in the community? So we're trying to develop that program where we can offer students those streams of excellence based on what they want to accomplish. So it's actually been kind of really cool to just start developing that and start putting some of those policies and practices in this year.
So how have you gone about that? Like that's your big 30,000 foot view. How does that filter down to the ground level and sort of day-to-day practice? Like what sort of things are you trying to work on with your team?
So even just coming down from that 30,000 foot view, we started looking at some of the research that's out there based on just some physical literacy research, based on long-term athlete development research. And we started chunking it in. So taking our pre-K to 12 program, chunking into specific phases, where each phase develops in a purposeful, progressive manner up until our final work point. So even just starting with introduction of physical literacy and the aspect of fun and enjoyment in our lower elementaries, building up those fundamental movement skills, then start integrating sports capacities and cooperative behaviors and social development and leadership development all the way up into sports specialization. And eventually those three separate streams of just elite sport or just active and recreation for life, or eventually being a sport leader.
For sure. And I think from the stuff that I've seen online that you've sort of posted, it seems like quite a big job. Would that be a fair comment?
It is. Like we've started the process this year, And it's taken, well, like all this week, we've not only had to talk about with our new teachers with curriculum and how to develop it, but also what would it look like? And then taking our vision and our statement and kind of the benchmarks we want to accomplish, and even then attaching them to our assessment standards that we're held accountable to by the governing body here in Dubai. So we're trying to take our vision, connect it to our curriculum outcomes, or the SHAPE standards, and giving it some foundation work so we could take that. It's like, these are my assessment statements, these are my teaching points, my development points, and that could eventually just filter into your day-to-day lesson planning, your unit planning, your conceptual planning.
For sure, for sure. So it is, like, I know, a big job. Like, how long do you see this project taking you? Is it something that will ever be complete, or do you think it's something that's just going to be continuously ongoing and changing as the years go by?
Well, as the process goes and evolve and as research comes out, it'll probably change. But for initially to develop this scheme of work, we're actually going to be ready to roll out with it within the next week or so. So when we actually get into the full swing of the school year, we have our assessment statements, our development statements that we connect them to our planning. And then the pieces behind that would be just be connecting our assessment practices and creating quality assessments that assess that criteria. So the process will be, I almost think it'll be the full year before we actually get it ironed out in terms of connecting it to assessment, to daily pedagogy, and all the other great stuff. So hopefully by the end of this year, it'll be something we could fine tune and push out and something we'd all be proud of.
Jason and his team are doing some incredible work around the idea of long-term athlete development, as he mentioned, and he talks a lot about in the full episode. It's something that my team and I used a lot in our curriculum development, and I definitely used Jace as a sounding board and as an inspiration for some of the work that my school have done around our curriculum redevelopment. Now, long-term athlete development as a concept is something that I know Jace learned a lot about through his studies and when he was undertaking his master's in Alberta. And this year, in an attempt to further my professional learning, I started my master's degree, a Master of Physical Education, through Memorial University of Newfoundland. So I started that back in September and took two courses in my first semester. I took a course on research methods and another one on a long-term athlete development. So it's something that I was able to stretch my knowledge about and share some of my thoughts through the course and some of the online modules that we took. And I have to say, taking that degree or starting that degree has been just a breath of fresh air for me. I really enjoyed extending myself and having to really think a little bit more deeply around some of the aspects of my practice. And I look forward to continuing that degree over the next year and a half and hopefully completing it at some time in 2021. Speaking of masters now, someone who is a master of their craft is a guy called Skylar Bowles. Now, Skylar is a master of a sport or a game called Round Net. You may have heard of it as something called spike ball. And in the episode, he talks a little bit about the difference between round net and spike ball and why it's important to make that distinction, as well as ways that you can incorporate spike ball or round net into your physical education curriculum. So have a little listen to a snippet from Skylar's episode and learn a little bit more about how you might include spike ball or round net in your school curriculum.
If I was a teacher and I decide that I want to put this into my curriculum and put it in my school, like, what, where do I start? Like, how do I start introducing this to kids?
So I think the best way is to start with the spike ball curriculum. You know, the one that I wrote with the help of a California Teacher of the Year named Stephen McLaughlin. So I was just learning how to write lessons, and he, you know, was writing for Spark at the time. So he definitely helped, you know, kind of bring my ideas to life. And they're just a great, you know, it breaks down a lot of the skills and gives you a bunch of little drills that you can do to improve your ball control, whether you're doing underhand or overhand pass or spiking or serving, defense, you know, offensive strategies. So I think that, you know, those resources are a great way to start. And, you know, Open from US Games, they're, you know, a great initiative where they're giving, you know, free resources to teachers And I love what they do. They took my curriculum and then made it better. And they made a middle school version of it. Mine was kind of an overall version. And then they also made a high school version. So they have a middle school RoundNet and a high school RoundNet curriculum that is based on mine, but you know, it's kind of beefed up and even better and newer. So I love that there. And you know, Spikeball YouTube channel is huge too. There's tons of videos, you know, the curriculum videos that come along with the curriculum, and then Spike School is really great. So I think, you know, those resources, and then just, you know, look them on YouTube, looking at top 10 plays or, you know, how to play or how to get better. There's a lot of resources out there. So that's what I would do. And the other thing is keep an open mind to using the equipment for physical education, not in its the right way. You know, everybody thinks the right way is, you know, 2-on-2 modified volleyball. But if you can think of ways to use the spike ball net and use it to build a different skill or help you in a different sport, you know, by all means, do it. Think outside the box and think about it as a piece of physical education equipment and not just, you know, an equipment for a certain sport. And I think that's one thing that a lot of teachers, you know, you modify a lot of basketball if you're playing with younger kids. You know, you don't play by the same rules. Same with volleyball. A lot of times you let it bounce. So think of other ways that you can use the spike ball net to get kids physically active, get their heart rates up, and working on different skills rather than, you know, just the normal 2-on-2, 3 hits per side way.
I think for me, when I've done it and over the past few years in teaching it, I've definitely refined the way that I go about it. And I'm an elementary school teacher. And so obviously it is a little bit more difficult, like you say, for younger kids. And so, yeah, modifying the rules or the number of players, or maybe not using the ball that comes with the set, using a bigger ball, has always been successful. And the way that I try and introduce it with my kids is sort of like that idea of leveling up, you know, at a very basic level. They're just like throwing and catching off the net. And then if they're successful at that, then you can sort of add in maybe like a self strike or like a partner toss to strike. There's so many different ways that you can modify the game. And the thing that I love about that is, well, you can, I've had, you know, four kids playing two on two. One team of two is throwing and catching. The other team is playing with, you know, three strikes, you know, full rules. And it doesn't really affect the way that the game is played. Like both teams are able to be successful at the level in which they're able to participate.
Absolutely. And I think that kudos to you for, you know, thinking outside the box and, you know, whatever you can do to make your students successful. If they're not having success, if they cannot hit the ball in the net, they're not going to want to do it in the future. And we're always thinking about, you know, making them, you know, lifelong participants in physical education. And that's something that, you know, you're going to want to do. You're going to want to be successful. You're going to want to be able to hit the ball in the net or throw it on the net because, oh, wow, now I can do this. And now there's something that I can get better where, wow, this is just too hard. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to quit. So, you know, I think it's really important to play at whatever level you're at and, or yeah, your partner's at, or, you know, make it different, work as a team, figure it out. So that's awesome that you know, have used it in a bunch of different ways and seen, I'm sure you've seen those kids progress, you know, pretty easily when you do slow it down.
Oh, definitely. And they love that, you know, concept of like leveling up as well. Like, oh, I'm onto the next level now. Like I can do the stuff that's harder, and then they want to get to the next level. So yeah, definitely it's been something that's worked really well for me, and I've seen other teachers use similar things. Round net or spike ball is one of my favorite games, hands down, both as something to play for fun, but also to include in my school curriculum. The students absolutely love it. It's fantastic. And a big shout out to Skylar for introducing me to the sport and teaching me some ways that I can modify it for my younger students. Now, one of my favorite episodes for the year was a discussion or a chat that I had with a guy called Carl Condliffe from New Zealand. Now, I was lucky to meet Carl at the Tasmanian ACHPA PE conference. Tasmania is where I come from originally. I was able to go back and present at that conference when I was living in Singapore a few years ago. And Carl was also an invited presenter, and I got chatting with him and learned a little bit about how he used to be a
pretty serious professional gamer, and how he's used that to help introduce some aspects of what's called gamification into his physical education program. So the episode with Carl really focuses on gamification, ways that you can include that in your physical education curriculum, and how that might be a really great way to engage some of those students who may be disengaged. So have a little listen to a snippet from Carl's episode and then go back if it's something that really interests you.
This is no difference what these game developers are doing to what we could be doing in the classroom. So if you're unfamiliar with gamification is the application of game mechanics in non-game contexts. So it's taking all of those things that game developers do really well within a game to bring you, to keep you engaged, and we take those and put them into the classroom. The thing that game developers do really well is they use a black hat approach. So they use really negative mechanics, things like scarcity, anchored juxtaposition. So that's a really good example that you see these days. So there's a developer called Supercell, and they make free games. Basically, you jump online, you can play these games on your iPad, your iPhone, whatever, and it doesn't cost you anything. There's no paywall. They're free. They're completely free. But a couple of years ago, they made a revenue of something like $3.5 billion for a free game. And the way they earn money is they have this game mechanic anchored juxtaposition where they give you a decision to make. And that decision might mean, here's this flash new armory that you could build. And you can wait the 3 days it's going to take to construct it, or you can have that now by paying this much. So they dangle this incentive that's going to cost you money, but because people don't want to wait, they're happy to pay for it. And that's one game mechanic. But they use these scarcity approaches that are not negative and not good in the classroom. So gamification in education is all about looking at things that are going to empower the learner, things that are going to create intrinsic motivation and want them to learn, want them to be engaged. So it's taking some of those game mechanics and bringing them in to the classroom. Most people know about badges and leaderboards and stuff like that, but again, they're external drivers. But if you can focus on things like narrative as a game mechanic, so the stories you create and you tell in the classroom to engage your learners, things like another common one is a trophy shelf, for example, where you, like if you go into a school these days, in New Zealand anyway, most traditional schools will have a trophy cabinet in the foyer, and that creates school pride and that creates a lot of happy energy around that school. So we can do that in the classroom. We can give our students the opportunity to share their successes and put them on display so they can take a bit of pride and that other class can see those achievements and go, oh, that's really cool. And I've seen what little Jimmy's done, and that makes me want to achieve like that. And it just builds that engagement within your classroom. So there's lots of little things that you can do there. So essentially, that's what gamification is.
Carl is a seriously smart dude, and I would highly recommend that you reach out and connect with him if you're interested in learning more about gamification. Speaking about connecting with any of these guests that we've had on the PhysEd cast across this year, if you listen to the episode, generally at the end of the episode, guests will share their social channels or emails or ways to connect with them. So if you're interested in anything that you hear in their episodes, then at the end, generally, there is some information about ways to contact them. And I can guarantee that every single one of the guests that I've had across 2019 would be more than happy to hear from you and to share some more of their knowledge with you around their area of expertise. Now, in 2020, we have some more exciting guests coming up. We'll be looking forward to releasing episodes really soon, chatting with some amazing physical educators, coaches, and people within the sports world. I'm trying really, really hard this year to get some really high-profile guests on the podcast. If there is somebody that you would really love to hear from, then feel free to please let me know or put me in contact with them. I'd be more than happy to speak with them, interview them. But our next episode coming up really early in 2020 is going to be with a guy called Scott Robeson. He is a very, very proud Indigenous man from the Muskoka Creek Nation, and he's going to be sharing with us some of the work that he's been doing with the Indian Health Service to improve the physical education experiences for Indigenous people within his community. community. I'll be chatting with Dale Sidebottom from Energetic and Education. And I know he's recently also been announced as one of the keynote speakers at the PE Institute coming up in Asheville, North Carolina in July. Guy with just so much energy. If you've ever met Dale or seen any of the work that he's doing, he is just what can only be described as an energizer bunny. So really looking forward to an episode with him. Be hoping to catch up with Amanda Stanek, hopefully, Sarah Gitchia-Hartman, hopefully, just trying to finalize some details around some other amazing physical educators, coaches, and people within the sports world. So thank you for sticking with us so far in 2019. If you're listening to this, I really appreciate you spending your time listening to these podcasts. I really enjoy putting them together, and I hope that you enjoy listening to them. I'm always open to feedback. I'd love to hear what you'd like to hear more of, less of, if there are any guests that you'd like on the show, but just for me it's a heap of fun to record it, and I hope that you get some value out of it, and it's really helping you to deliver some physical education with purpose to your students. Now, as I said, 2019 was an incredibly busy year for me personally. Not only was I able to put these podcasts out and continue to work on this show, I had the website up and running. We were able to release our Teaching Games with Purpose online course, as well as the Purposeful Games database, where every month we're adding five amazing games to that resource. I was able to obviously do all those presentations. I started my master's degree. I also welcomed the second member, our second child, to our family. So our family of four now, with our two girls, Isla and Emmy. And it's just been an amazing year. I didn't even mention that obviously I was still working full-time as the department head at Meadow Ridge School. So it's just been an absolutely full-on year. 2019 was a great year for me, and 2020 is also going to be an exciting year. I'm hoping to get out some new online courses. I'm looking forward to presenting at the PE Institute, continuing to build the games database. We're up to about 45 games right now. I'm hoping to get that up to over 100 games really, really soon, as well as searching out new opportunities to present or share with phys ed teachers, departments, districts, anywhere in the world, just really to help develop a culture of purposeful phys ed and quality physical education. If I can help teachers, then I can also help students. So not only am I looking forward to continuing to work with my students at my school, but helping you so that you're able to help your students better. So for 2019, thank you so much for listening to the Phys Ed Cast. It's been an absolute pleasure to have all the guests that we've had on, and I really can't thank you enough for listening, and thank those guests that we've had on the show, and I look forward to connecting with more and more people across 2020 as we grow the Phys Ed Cast even bigger and bigger. My name is Nathan Horn from iphysed.com. I've been your host for the Phys Ed Cast 2019, and I look forward to connecting with you in 2020. Happy New Year.